Blog Talk Radio.
Time for Sports Card Live. With Sports Card Radio's Ryan Tedders, Colin Tedders, MojoBreak.com's Dan Anderson, and your host, Doug Caskey. Dig it.
Rippers and sports nuts, welcome to another episode of Sports Card Live. I'm joined with Ryan. How you doing, buddy?
Fantastic. I'd ask how you were doing, but Sunday probably determined your mood for the week. So,
yeah, I'm still wishing it was, you know, just a bad nightmare, and I'm going to wake up and we're going to be six-time champs. But unfortunately, you know, you can't win them all.
That's true. I doubt that's true.
Exactly. We're going to be joined by Dan here shortly, and we got two guests today. So our second episode, two guests. We got Kevin Isaacson from the Industry Summit, going to be talking about all the happenings in Vegas this year behind the Industry Summit. And we're also going to be joined by Rich Layton from Layton Sports Cards. So he's going to talk about the trials and tribulations of opening a card shop and having online breaks. So we got a jam-packed show. We're going to talk about some recent releases like Prism Football, which is lighting up eBay right now. Everybody's talking about it on forums. Lots of stuff to talk about today in this hour and a half, two-hour show. So wanted to start it off with the Super Bowl talk. Ryan already kind of preluded into that. But what were your thoughts on the Super Bowl?
You know, I thought it was interesting. I thought the power outage was an interesting little twist. The unfortunate situation for me is I didn't have a rooting interest. So right as the Niners failed their two-point conversion, I think that would have tied the game, maybe at 31 or something like that. I fell asleep, woke up, realized that I had fallen asleep just as the Super Bowl was getting good, flipped to a channel, saw that they were interviewing John Harbaugh, the Ravens coach, and he looked real happy and stuff. So I was like, oh, man.
You put two and two together at that point.
yeah. But I mean, the power outage obviously kind of, I think it definitely helped the 49ers kind of get back into it. Although the Niners had been falling behind. They were down 17 to Atlanta on the NFC Championship game, if I'm not mistaken. So, and they've been playing that, and I think they got down to the Patriots on a Monday night or Sunday night game earlier in the season. And Kaepernick kind of, you know, I don't know, flips the switch in the second half or when they get down a little bit and gets it going. So maybe you can talk about, I guess, a little bit at the end of the game that I missed and your overall devastation of them losing, I guess.
Well, I'm trying to forget it, but unfortunately I'm remembering it and reliving it for these last couple days. But, you know, a lot of conspiracy theories out there about the power and, you know, people saying that the Niners were involved and stuff like that. You know, MojoBreak.com did not have any hand in the power going out. So I wanted to make that clear right off the bat. But, yeah, I mean, they fought back. There were some bad calls. I mean, I can't, you know, I was blaming it on the bad call at the end. But at the end of the day, we fell apart in the first half. And Flacco looked, you know, silenced all critics. You know, everybody was saying he's not an elite level quarterback, and I think he in fact proved the world wrong in that regard by, you know, winning the Super Bowl MVP and just, you know, showing up. And, you know, people forget that, you know, Flacco was in the playoffs the last 5 years. So, I mean, he definitely never got the credit he deserved, so maybe he will now.
Yeah. What do you think this is going to do to the card prices of somebody like Kaepernick, who got red hot? I mean, I think his autographs could be had very, very cheap at the beginning of the season when he was a backup, and they really shot up, obviously, when he got the start and played well. But now all of a sudden, oh, you know, he kind of showed some chinks in the armor in the Super Bowl, and I'd imagine at least the price of his cards might level off or perhaps go down. And then, but on the opposite end of the spectrum, Joe Flacco, who's been, you know, collected and it's not like his, you know, his nice rookie autographs. I'm sure those aren't cheap, or those weren't cheap 4 or 5 months ago, maybe compared to now. Let's talk a little bit about that. What do you think is going to happen? And other players, maybe like a Ray Lewis who's retired, and maybe some of the other Ravens cards, how you think it could maybe in the at least short term affect their card prices?
Well, yeah, definitely seen a little bit of a spike on Flacco's cards. So people are going after his Exquisite, it seems like. You know, Upper Deck still had the license when he was a rookie, so there's some nice, you know, RPA jumbo patches on card of Flacco. So those ones are like the big ticket items right now. Kaepernick has gone down. We've seen it trend down 20, 30 bucks compared to his prices a week ago. So, you know, this may be a homer pick here, but I would advise if you're going to buy, you know, maybe wait a couple more weeks because I think it's going to plummet a little farther, and maybe invest because, I mean, this guy showed us, you know, in the short amount of time that, you know, he's got all the tools necessary to get the Niners back to the Super Bowl and drive this hobby. And I'm sure a lot of 2013 products are going to have Kaepernick in sets because he was in 2011 because it was rookie premier class that he was in, but he was pretty absent from, you know, 2012 products. So you'll definitely see Topps Panini, all these guys kind of get him in other products coming out. So definitely mark of approval to wait a few weeks and start putting some money in Kaepernick.
Right, right. And I guess they have a few other players, young players on a team like Michael James could get more of an opportunity. You know, as Frank Gore gets a little older and more expensive, you know, and I think they even have some young receivers who haven't gotten a whole lot of time. Michael Crabtree really kind of stepped up this year. I know some of his off the field transgressions maybe won't, you know, get him a whole lot of hobby love, but, you know, they have a really exciting, I mean, they made it to the NFC Championship game last year, made it to the Super Bowl this year with a completely different quarterback. So I think the future's bright. But man, it's got to be tough to lose that game.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, it was bound to happen. You win 5 in a row. I mean, not everybody can win the Super Bowl, but I think you're right about LaMichael James. I mean, there was Kendall Hunter who went down with an injury, but I think that LaMichael James will come out on top after Frank Gore. I think he'll be the guy. I think it'll still be a running back by committee sort of approach. I don't think the Niners are going to ever have that feature back. I think Frank Gore was the, you know, last, you know, feature back in that kind of backfield. So I think LaMichael James has a little bit more talent on, as far as receiving, and he's a little quicker than Kendall. He may be a little smaller, though, so maybe he can't take as many hits, but I think the collectability as far as the next Niner running back, I think LaMichael James is the guy that you you want to go after.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
Well, enough about that Super Bowl talk. Brings up too many bad memories for 49er fans, but, you know, congratulations to the Ravens. I mean, Ray Lewis had a storied career. There's not too many guys who have stayed with one team. You know, he could have obviously explored the free agent market many times. He stayed with one team. He, you know, fans love him, and a lot to be said about that, and he went out on top. So a very deserving Super Bowl victory for Mr. Ray Lewis.
Definitely.
But we got our first guest. Kevin Isaacson is on hold, so we're going to go ahead and put him in the queue here. We're going to talk some industry summit talk, so let me bring on Kevin. Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
No problem. So how's things going with you? You in full summit mode already?
We're in full summit mode. Actually, since I've been listening to the show, I've heard from Scott Prusha at Panini, Brian Gray from Leaf, and a couple other industry notables. So it's fast and furious over here.
You need a couple different phones, a couple people answering phones just to kind of keep the tally going, you know?
It really is an exciting the summit's really an exciting time for everybody in the industry because it's kind of the time where people get to reintroduce themselves to the business, show off their new ideas and concepts, and so there's a lot of excitement, a lot of planning, and we're kind of you know, doing that pre-work right now.
Nice. And if you could give some of the people out there don't really know about the Industry Summit, if you could give a little bit of a background, you know, of what the Industry Summit's about and what the goals are at the summit.
Glad to do so. Yeah, the summit is really kind of a opportunity for everybody who does business in the sports card and collectible industry to get together and talk about the business, network, share ideas, For retailers especially to get together and talk about ways they think the business can be improved. It really is our one touch point as an industry to look at what we've done and look at what we want to do. So it's definitely an insider event. We bring about 450 industry leaders, typically the principals of every company from Tops and Panini to executives like you guys, and we sit around for 3.5 days, interact, some of it's social, a lot of it's pretty intense business, but at the end of it, we kind of end up with a revised mission statement for the business, and several interesting business developments have come out of the summit. Several changes in card company policy have been originated at the event, so it really is, for a gathering of just a couple hundred people, it really is a way to kind of analyze and then reinvest in the business on an annual basis.
Nice. And you know, Ryan's been there a couple of years. That was our first year last year, and we made so many valuable connections, and just the experience alone was great. And I know blogs, and they're all a buzz about, like, you know, promos that have been are given out at these shows, like the Black Box from Panini. That's a real big hit, in which every box has a 101. Talk about some of the promos in past years and things that really kind of gotten everybody excited at the summit.
That's really one of the fun elements, and I think I think one of the best compliments that I receive every year is the first-time attendees at the summit who truly have a blast, and they're reminded why they got into this business, why they love the business, and why they want to stay in the business. And the card companies and distributors really deserve a lot of credit for utilizing their creativity to make some neat things for the people who are tightest to this business. Their distributors and the brick and mortar retailers and the online retailers who, you know, work it every day. So typically Upper Deck will come up with something that is truly unique, special cards for the summit, only available there, one per attendee, and you know, people find LeBrons, Tigers, I'm sure there'll be Rorys this year, and some really interesting stuff that you can only get at the summit. Retailers are able to take that back to their shop or sell online or create a promotion, but the bottom line is it really kind of reinforces the tight relationship between manufacturer and seller and reminds us all why we like the business.
Definitely, and you know, just for everybody else out there, who should go and why?
Anybody who is serious about their day-to-day involvement in the sports trading card or sports collectible business. So an online seller is going to have the ability to make all sorts of contacts, be able to source new product, and exchange ideas with other online sellers. Someone who is interested in getting into the business and may want to open a hobby store or, you know, who knows what idea they have, it's a great idea to get feedback from people who have long, successful careers in the business and understand what it takes to succeed. We actually have a 14-year-old high school student this year who is running an online trading card business right now, and his mother, as a birthday present, is bringing him to the summit so he can learn more from people who are invested in the business. So it's a fun event, and the promos are certainly a neat element of it, but really it is a reasonably serious exploration of what's going on in the business, what issues are restraining our growth and development, and what each class of trade can do to make the industry as a whole better next year.
Definitely, and that's, I'm glad you hit up on that, because I was just going to mention that, you know, one of the panels last year, I mean, a lot of people think that Tops, Panini, or whoever the manufacturer may be, you know, are not after their best interests. But the whole point of the summit, one of the points of the summit is to, you know, take these constructive criticism that collectors have and kind of see what kind of avenues they can do to change it. Like last year, you know, redemptions. Obviously, people, it's a bummer about redemptions. And there were, you know, panels trying to decide what's the best way to handle redemptions. And it was really kind of a productive, especially from an outsider being their first time. It's like, wow, these discussions go on, and there's positives that are, you know, trying to change the hobby.
You know, you're exactly right. I'll give you a couple examples. Last year, Jason Howarth, who's VP of Marketing at Panini, really was taken by the need for improved customer service, and so across the business. So he made a commitment on behalf of his company to really try to get it done right. And you don't see it written about a lot or talked about a lot, but Panini has done a wonderful job improving on the customer service side of the business. Chris Carlin over at Upper Deck really started thinking about expired redemptions. And, you know, let's be honest, there are people who love opening product that's 2, 3, 4 years old, and there's a lot of fun in that process, but every once in a while you get a redemption. So Upper Deck has created a expired redemption program that they execute at various trade shows, and they're actually going to do it live at the summit this year. And so that'll be neat for retailers to be able to work with their customers, bring in expired redemptions, and they've put together a nice lineup of prizes to try to address that concern. So you're right. You know, people are not, I mean, clearly, everybody's in business to make money, and we understand that. But the people who are in this vertical market specifically really enjoy sports, really enjoy collectibles, and really want to do the right thing for their customers. And the summit really allows them to get a gut-level approach or assessment of what their customers are saying and what their customers' customers are saying. And I think it makes us a better business simply by having that in-person exchange.
Yeah, definitely. And it's, like I said, we learned a lot of things, met a lot of people, and it's a great experience for anybody out there that's on the fence of going. I would definitely recommend going. I mean, now that we've went, we're pretty much going to go every year and contribute in whatever way we can. Talk about how the industry summit started off. Now, I know me and you had a conversation on the phone about the Hawaii. If you want to kind of divulge into how it started, how the idea, you know, came to be, and how it was implemented.
Glad to do so. Yeah, I'm fortunate to be able to call Kit Young, who's a legendary retailer and really founder of any kind of trade conference in our industry. I'm fortunate to call him a good friend. And nearly 30 years ago now, Kit decided that the industry, which was really more of just a hobby at that point, he decided that it would be a good idea to get people together and talk about industry issues. And he also wanted a way, very honestly, to write off part of his vacation home in Hawaii. So he called it the Hawaii Trade Conference and invited a bunch of friends to Hawaii and made a business event out of it. So what started with 30 mostly vintage retailers getting together in Hawaii quickly morphed into an essential industry event. And within Kit's first 8 years of running it, he had every manufacturer and licensors, and the business focus really came to the Kit Young Hawaii Trade Show every February. And I was fortunate years ago to be able to work with Kit and support him by creating the business program and helping him run the event. And he and his wife, Patty, run the event for several years. And subsequently, they moved toward retirement. They sold the business. It was run by Krause Publications for a while. And for whatever reason, their focus on the business waned, and they decided not to move forward with the trade show. And I was talking to Kit, actually, and I said, you know, I still really think this is an important thing for the business. And he agreed. And so what I determined to do was, with some support from, you know, some good friends, is try to reestablish what Kit and his wife Patty had created. And there's only one Kit Young, and I would never claim to even play in that league. But I'm fortunate and thrilled that you know, the event we've put together in Vegas has kind of stayed true to their vision and, you know, provides a good opportunity for people to network today.
Well, and kudos to all your hard work. I mean, it definitely shows, and everybody enjoys the event, and everybody seems to have a good time. Plus, you know, Vegas is a little teaser to get you down to the summit as well. So, you know, before we let you go, Kevin, can still sign up and go? And what would be the best way to, you know, get a ticket to the industry summit? Where can people go to do so?
Our website is theindustrysummit.com, and all sorts of information on the event, including registration online, is available there. Also, contact information if people, for whatever reason, aren't comfortable registering online, although nowadays I think 99% of us are comfortable doing that. But we're glad to help people who are coming for the first time get set up. It really is kind of a family approach that we try to bring, which really emulates, again, what Kit and Patty Young did with their event. And so it's our family and a couple of friends who help run it. We'll be there to greet you when you come, and it is just you know, pretty easy, good time. And you guys are right, Vegas doesn't hurt either, does it?
It does not.
Not at all.
Well, I know you're a busy man, Kevin, so I want to let you get back to you know, all those phone calls you have to make. So I do appreciate your time coming on the show, and people can follow you at. On Twitter, at industry_summit. Is that correct?
That is correct. Thanks for mentioning it. And, again, thanks for having me on tonight. And, you know, can't wait to see you guys in a couple of weeks over in Vegas.
Definitely. We're looking forward to it.
Take care.
All right, Kevin. Well, take care. You have a good day, man. All right. And Dan in the building. What's up, Dan?
Yeah. What up?
You missed the we glossed right over the Super Bowl part just for you.
I know. I apologize, guys. I was just you know, held up a little bit.
Yeah, no, it's all good. Me and Ryan talked about the Super Bowl, and you know, we didn't need your opinion on it anyway, really.
We know your opinion. Let's do it over again.
Yeah. It was a Super Bowl to remember. And that's where we'll leave it at that. And, you know, I wanted to move into the next segment because it's real near and dear to my heart. It was probably one of the most exciting news I've heard in a long time is the fact that Topps Archives 2013, you know, they did Topps Archives last year, baseball. They're doing it again for baseball. And they're introducing metal cards. Not only are the cards metal, they're metal bands.
No kidding! Have you guys seen the checklist yet?
I have it all geared up here. I mean, it's on card autos, and they're going to be like the box topper kind of type thing that was in the last set with the Karate Kid guys. And before I got something for you here, Dan. So we got Sebastian Bach from Skid Row, Tommy Lee from Motley Crue.
I know who you're going to say, and I'm pretty stoked actually.
Bobby Brown. Well, I got a little sound clip too. Bobby Brown from Warrant, Cherry Pie Video. Steve Percy from Rat. Scott Ian from Anthrax. Dee Snider from Twisted Sister. And the headliner is Axl Rose, who hasn't signed since like 1987 or something. He has no certified autographs out there. And before you guys chime in, I got a little something for you guys here. Kip Winger, baby. All felt you set. And yeah, I can't get enough of the set. That just that pretty much says it right there. I can't get enough.
Well, not only Kip Winger is in the set, but Red Beach is in the set too.
Yeah,
he's the guitar player for Winger, and he was also in White Snake, and he was also in Dokken, and the list goes on and on and on. That guy's like pretty much my favorite guitar player.
Yeah, are they gonna have Playgirl relics of Kip Winger?
Yeah, I knew that was coming.
Listen, any Winger there, Ryan?
I'm a '90s guy. If it was like Eddie Vedder and like, you know. It could even be like Gangster. You could get Dr. Dre. He was around in the 80s too, but yeah, like Gangsta, some 90s. See, I'm 90s. Like anything that happened in the 80s, I was, you know, 7, 8 years old. I can't even, you know, remember that far back. So, you know, yeah, if it was 90s bands, I would be like very interested in that. I don't think Eddie Vedder would do anything like that. So I don't think he's waiting for a phone call from Topps, but.
Maybe 2000.
Going to do a video. Yeah, if they don't do music videos, then I don't think he's going to sign for Tops. So.
And you asked about the limited. They're going to be 25
yeah.
copies of each.
So okay. Wow. Those Axl Rose ones are going to be woo-wee. Those are going to be expensive. Wow.
Yeah, that's if he shows up. I mean, I don't know.
Redemption. Don't know.
Yeah. No, I don't think any of these will be redemptions. It looks like they've already got them to sign. So.
Oh, cool. Wow.
I think he can bust out 25 copies and, you know, still make the concert, not miss the Metallica concert, you know?
Yeah. I bet he got paid a lot for that. I bet he got a lot per autograph. Who knows?
Yeah.
But, man, I bet a lot.
So
that's
what
pretty
is,
cool.
What's the bass set based off of this year? Is it like, obviously it's like an 80s Tops. Is it like 87, 88? What is it? Anybody know?
I think they mixed it up. It was like last year it was like four different of their old school brands
okay.
for like part of the base. It was like I can't even remember, but it was all mixed up. Like they had some 80s, but there was even some 50s I think in there and some 70s. They really kind of throw it back to the old school. I won't even say some of the ones were like even some 90s variations and stuff. They just kind of like dip
yeah.
into their literally archives, I think, with all the designs and kind of thing they're doing. I think it's a really nice set. I know that it's kind of on the lower end of the spectrum, but I think people who collected back in that day, they really liked that set, and obviously because it's just kind of like a throwback Mustang or something, you know, that Ford comes out with or something. It's like, oh, wow. So I think that's interesting they added the heavy metal cards. They had a couple last year. They had
The Karate
I'm not
Kid.
Doing
the
movie. Karate
Kid.
Yeah, I'm horrible
yeah.
with movies. So they had a couple of box toppers or something like that.
Yeah, Ralph,
yeah, they were
Ralph Macchio.
Yep. And then the other guy, I can't think of his name, but he was the villain.
Johnny?
Yeah, but
Johnny,
I can't think of his real name.
Sweep the leg, Johnny?
Cobra Kai, never die. Well, here's your answer for 2013 Topps Archives. It's going to be the first 50 cards in the base set is going to be 1972. Cards 51 through 100 are going to be 1982.
Okay.
101 to 150 are 1985. And the final 50 cards are going to be the 1990 Topps baseball design.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah. Was that the 50th anniversary edition, I think? Or no, that was a little bit before.
40?
40th anniversary, I think, wasn't it?
Oh, no, that was 91, wasn't it? Wasn't it 91?
Yeah.
Because it was 51 was their first kind of quote-unquote set, and then they came out with the 52. They came out with the 52 set that's more famous than the 51. They're like red back, blue back kind of little square cards, if I'm not mistaken. But I wasn't born then, so I don't know.
Yeah, I collected – I think I had the set of 86, 87, 88, and 89, and I think I, for some reason, we stopped collecting at that point. So from, like, you know, 90 to 99, I had none of those sets. So I guess
well,
I need
you
to
– You could probably buy all nine sets for, like, $20 total somewhere.
Well, that would definitely be you know, one of these.
Shoot, came up.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, get one of those. It came up for $50 for all the sets there. I'll have to search eBay on that one. But, yeah, I'm excited for that metal set, man. I might have to try to, you know, drop some dollars and collect that set. So, did you guys know whose birthday it is today?
Not yours.
I have no idea. Is it Hank Aaron?
Yep, Hank Aaron.
What's up?
Happy
Smartest
birthday.
Man alive
Hank.
Right here.
That's dropping some knowledge.
Dang, that was good.
There's only like a 4-second delay on that one, man. That was so quick.
Google there real quick.
Now you got fast fingers on that Google machine over there.
I'm sitting in my car, man. No Google machine. That's just right off the dome.
You know, you got like one of those touch screens in your car that just boom, 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 pull right up. Little iPad mini. No. Well, there's some buzz about Prism Football. Dan, you've opened a lot of it. What do you think of Prism Football? That was just released on Wednesday, and a lot of people searching for gold. What are your thoughts?
Well, we were talking about it. The basketball was so hard to pull a gold. I mean, it was like one per case, and sometimes it wasn't even one per case. And on average so far, you're pulling about three golds in the football, which, I mean, I just base it on there's got to be a bigger checklist.
Yeah.
But, man, good looking cards. I mean, those are cards. A lot of those autos, I'd get graded, man. Like, cards are, like, in pristine condition. We haven't had, like, any damage or anything like that. Surface is all good. I mean, they did a really, really good job with that set.
Definitely. I mean, I think the biggest complaint is that they have a lot of the marquee names of redemption. So you got Russell Wilson, Trent Richardson, Andrew Luck, even some Doug Martens, and those are all redemptions.
I think Bernard Pierce is also a redemption, too.
Well, he's on the Ravens. Who cares?
Yeah, good. Guy's the future.
He's good. Yeah, he is. He's pretty talented. He's going to be the number one guy probably, if not next year, the year before, year after, because Ray Rice is, I don't know how much more gas he's got left in the tank. So.
He's got a couple years left.
You think so?
Yeah. But Pierce is going to be good, man. That guy's solid.
Yeah.
So, Ryan, how do you compare this to basketball? I don't know if you've busted. I know you've worked on the checklist, obviously, with Prism Football, but what are your thoughts in comparison to the – I mean, it's almost identical design, but what do you think value for, you know, the basketball version compared to the football version?
Well, it's a little different because they have – in the basketball, it was you know, just – you had the rookie cards and the base set, and they had a gold parallel to 10. Okay, but in the football set, okay, you have a base set, and you have gold parallels off that to 10. Then you have rookie cards, Andrew Luck and Doug Martin, you know, all those guys, to number to 10. But then you have these rookie variations, and there's about, can't remember. I have it on my website. But it has like Andrew Luck, Robert Griffin, and those have gold variations to 10. So there are actually 20 gold prism Andrew Lucks. There's 20 Robert Griffins. There's some rookies that only have 10, whereas in the basketball set, it was just all straight to 10. So I can see how the basketball, they were harder pull. And then also another thing they did with these is they threw in the red die cut. I think it's numbered to 25 or 50. I can't remember.
I don't think the reds are numbered. And the reds, I think the reds are falling one per box too.
Yes, but there's one per box.
I think it's a little different. They look like they should be numbered, though. That's, you know, we pull one out, we're like, oh, this should be numbered.
Right. Yeah, they are nice cards. Yeah, they're very nice cards. I was lucky I pulled a gold prism out of basketball. It might even still be the highest selling gold card that's sold, but that's tooting my own horn probably. So, anyways, like the football, it's a little different because the rookies. The big distinction is the 20 though is because and some of the variations because it's just like a standard like Tops when they do photo variations, but some of them are very, very hard to tell. Like one, there's one guy where it's just his pink towel is like missing and it's like the same exact photo practically. Andrew Luck is a little hard to tell because he's just turned a little bit. So it's a little, I think people can get deceptive because they think, oh, I pulled the Andrew Luck, gold parallel to 10. Well, yeah, you did, but there's also a variation that also has a gold to 10. So they're a little more. So that's how it's worth. You know, it's different from the basketball set because the basketball just had gold parallel to 10. They didn't have any of these variations that also had a gold parallel to 10.
Definitely, and I know you're a basketball guy. Do you think the cards were driven up by the international market that's so large in basketball compared to football?
I don't think basketball gets enough credit for having guys who are willing to spend a lot of money on basketball cards. Michael Jordan cards, Kobe Bryant, old exquisite cards, old 1996-97 precious metal gems. The precious metal gems that came out of 2011-2012 Fleer Retro probably caught a lot of people by surprise. They're like, holy cow, these cards numbered to 10 are selling for $13,000 of, you know, LeBron and Michael and Michael Jordan and stuff. I think, but it is a huge, huge international market, but there's a lot of people in the States that just love basketball. and love basketball cards. Maybe they're a little more quiet about it, or they don't. I don't know what it is, but the basketball market, especially on eBay, is very, very strong for high end type of items like the prisms to 10, like anything, you know, those Fleer retro cards, and even not even the precious metal gems even in that set. Some of the inserts in that set sell very well. So basketball collectors are strong. They don't go on forums, or they don't know. They're very quiet about their collection, but I've ran into many a basketball collector who spends a lot of money on basketball cards monthly.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think the buzz on the basketball prism set basically upped the value of the football, at least like out of the pre-sale.
Definitely.
I mean, because what was when Prism Basketball came out, maybe what street price, maybe like $80 a box.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
It shot up and went
100?
Crazy.
Was the map
on 100?
I don't know. Maybe.
That makes sense. Actually, I think it was less, though. I think it was less than 100. Because
okay.
I want to say, like, wholesale cost was probably in, like, the 60 to 70 range of some, like, something like that. So I think it was under, it was definitely under $100 map, and football, like the same day release, like street price went from like roughly $100 to $120 in like one day.
Whew.
So I think the buzz on basketball basically upped the price instantly on football. People just started going crazy for it. I mean, I think it's, I think 120 a box. And with all the photo variations, it's still a good value. I see it coming down, though. I think it's going to come down around $100 a box at some point.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I see it on Blowout right now for $118, so it's really kind of dropped a dollar from the beginning of the week. I was offered it basically at that same price from a distributor today, so that's around the market. Yeah, so I'm like, okay. I'll pass on it for now, but yeah, people would... Yeah, it was like, I think it was like $4 less. I mean, and that's what a lot of people don't get is that, you know, on a wholesale side, not to, you know, give away too many secrets, but it's, you know, it's blowouts around the same price at times, especially on secondary market stuff. There's really not a whole big change from the internet side of things to, you know, our side of things. So,
correct.
But, you know, I think it's a good set. The redemptions, in my opinion, were the bummer, as I would love to have seen. We pulled an RG3, would love to have seen it. You know, well, I want to see the auto, not the white card with writing on it, because there's no boom effect on that. You know, it's a lot of nice-looking cards. Those golds obviously wow everybody, and it's a good overall set. Looks like Rich is on hold. We're going to play our little interlude here for a couple minutes, and then we'll bring Rich on. I know he's been patiently waiting, so I'm going to go ahead and get this thing started, and we'll bring Rich on right after.
Sweet.
Flashbacks of mediocrity. The year is 2007. This is the average Joe walking into a card store. I'm at the bar with her. Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, how you doing, man? Hey, nice velour suit. Did Mark Echo have a discount?
Yeah, man, got that. Picked this up for like one.
One what?
$100.
Yeah,
my boy works down there at the place in the mall, man.
Fat Farm, Juicy?
Yeah, it was something like that. No, what's that place called in the mall, man? Anyways, hey, I'm trying to get me a Jamarcus card. I want to pick that up. What kind of set should I buy, man?
Well, you're looking for top shelf. You're looking for just something basic.
I ain't talking about alcohol. I'm talking about a Jamarcus Russell card, man.
All right.
Autograph.
All right, let me get you the cream of the crop right now. We got this Topps Triple Threads. You hip to that? Too many boxes? One full box? I can do it for $175.
Triple Threads? Hey, we're not talking about my velour suit, man. I want to pick up some cards and have some Jamarcus Russell on them.
Hey, Topps Triple Thread might have a relic of your velour suit.
Sweet, man. Hey, how much is that going to set me back, man?
I told you, $175 is the best I can do.
Man, I'll give you $40.
Dollars?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually not going to work out.
Oh, man.
The best I can do pay cash, I'll do 155, and I'll throw in some top loaders for your hits.
All right, man. How about I give you 150, and you give me 27 130-point top loaders?
I don't think you're going to need 130-point top loaders.
You know what I do with my base cars, man, is I take a lot of them, I just shove them all up in there.
Where are you from?
Oakland, smoking.
All right.
Anyways, you know, I've been listening to that T-Pain. Thought I'd come in the store. Looks like you got a good establishment, man. Can you sell that for 150 for me?
Okay, 150. Let's do it.
All right, let me bust into this. I better get myself a DeMarcus Russell.
Can I get some cash up?
No, I got to see what I get first, man. You don't get the merchandise without a. I don't pay before I see what I'm getting.
You good for it?
Oh, man. What is this? A relic? What's a relic, man? Isn't that something old? It's an antique store.
It's a Jersey Pete. Man, that's a Calvin Johnson relic. That's number 10.
Like Calvin and Hobbs, man? I've never even heard of this guy. I just want me a DeMarcus Russell.
He's the number one receiver in this year's draft. How much you want for that?
You can just get
$150.
Yeah.
I'll give you a top
Hey, next pack. Oh, snap.
What'd you get?
Oh, DeMarcus Russell 101. Triple auto.
Congratulations.
Damn.
He signed it 3 times?
No, triple jersey auto is what I'm trying to say, man. Clean out your ears, man.
Weird.
I know you're blinded by my velour suit, but I got a triple auto with DeMarcus Russell here, man.
Wow.
That's my favorite player from TSU.
Actually, one of TSU?
TSU, man.
He went to Tulane?
He went to TSU, man. What are you trying to question me for? I'm about to pistol whip this motherfucker.
Let me get you a top loader. Hey, are you... You married to that card?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think this, I'm not into the stocks game, but I think this is a great investment.
Okay. How about, look, I got this 101 Adrian Peterson here. Otto. I know a guy who pay me a good amount of money for that card. How about we do a straight across trade?
Adrian Peterson, the guy that plays for Chicago?
No, he plays for Viking. Are you a football guy?
I watch every Sunday, man.
Every Sunday?
Every Sunday. I don't want the guy on Chicago that's got the dreads, man.
That's the wrong guy.
Oh.
So,
you mean the guy that plays for the Vikings, dude? That guy's he's the next Lawrence Phillips.
Wow. I'll give you $100 and my Adrian Peterson 101.
No, man.
You want to do that?
No, because come 2011, when Jamaicus has won 3 Super Bowls, I'm going to be able to sell that for like $1,500. You want to give me $1,500 right now? I'll sell it.
Ooh, I'm going to have to pass on that.
Well, I'm going to walk out your store. I'm going to come back in 2011 and swim. DeMarcus Russell is going to win 3 Super Bowls.
I'll give you.
And I'll be laughing at you.
I'll give you $50 and you come back.
I don't think so.
Hey, but I appreciate your business anyway.
All right, well, have a good day. I ain't paying you. This has been an episode of Flashbacks of Mediocrity.
All right, guys, we're back. And yeah. We got Rich on hold. So hey. Anybody want to go buy some DeMarcus Russell cards?
Yeah, Eddie? Man, that was longer than I thought it was.
That was like from podcast number 3, hence the date 2011. But we rehashed it a little.
You know, what the funny thing is that DeMarcus Russell might be a guy you want to collect again, man. Guy's making a comeback.
Ooh, I think he's coming back as an offensive lineman.
Nah, man. Okay. Watch, man. That guy's gonna be in the Pro Bowl.
All right. Well, it's time to bring Rich on from Layton Sports Cards here. I'm gonna click him live. What's up, Rich? How you doing, man?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Not much. Sorry to keep you waiting there.
Ah, no problem at all.
So we got Rich here. He's from LaytonSportsCards.com. He opened up a shop in Cape May, and we'll start off by getting a little bit of background about yourself, how you came to the idea of box breaking and opening up the shop, and then maybe tell us a little bit about who you collect and how you got started collecting.
Good question, man. We actually, my wife and I, we've been together for about 10 years now. Well, needless to say, to go back even further, I started collecting when I was about 7 years old. My dad took me to local card shows and, had me walk around, pick out my favorite players, and he'd buy me a couple singles and get me a couple packs. And I'd take them home and sort them out and put them all in top loaders and sleeves and put them all on display for my friends to come over and you know, look at and we'd trade and everything else. And, you know, it grew and it grew and it grew. And my dad even went back into collecting from when he was a kid. And next thing you know, I've got a huge collection. I amassed a very large collection of cards from the 90s and everything else. Then the bubble burst and they weren't worth the paper they were printed on. And next thing you know, I'm out there, totally got out of the hobby and I got angry at it, if you will. And my wife and I met each other and she bought me a box of cards and here I am. Long story short. It went from one singular box of 2010 Top Series 1 to hobby shop and online case breaking and everything else. I mean, it just re-sparked, it rekindled the fire, and it re-sparked my interest in the hobby, and here I am, honestly.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, yeah, a lot of us have similar stories like that as well. I need to know where we can find women that buy boxes of cards for us. I mean, maybe you can send an email to my fiance or something, say, hey, this is what he likes or something. No, I'm just kidding. Ryan, you used to run a card store. Did you have any questions for Rich as far as starting things up and things that everybody can kind of learn from?
Yeah, definitely. I have some questions for Rich. Rich, what I guess tell us where your card shop is. I'm curious to know like what the square footage is, what sells well, I guess, or how long you've been open, kind of what sells well. What do people come in and try to sell you? Because I know that was a big thing in my card store. Just kind of talk about a little bit about that process of, you know, here you get a box in 2010, and then going through the process of opening a retail store. You did it rather quickly, so talk about like all that experience.
Well, good question again. The reason it seemed quick is actually because nobody knew that we were, you know, I've actually been planning this since I was a child. This is literally a lifelong dream. And I know it sounds cliche and kind of corny and tacky, but that is the truth. You know, I from the time I was a kid, my dad took me to the card shop. I was like, this is what I want to do. And my dad's like, really? You want to stand behind a counter and sort cards all day and catalog things? I'm like, yeah, this is what I want to do. And over the past few years, my wife and I have been saving money and, you know, waiting for the right time and the right place. And, you know, so what we did was we started online really, really small. And because we could do it from home. And believe it or not, I don't mean to name drop or sound like a brown nose, but I stumbled across box breaks, videos of box breaks on YouTube. And believe it or not, guys like Mojo Break and others out there doing their thing. And I'd watch the videos and be like, wow, this is a very interesting way of going through cards and going through product and getting the cards out to the consumers. And it kind of grew from there. It's like, well, you know, maybe I could give it a shot. And next thing you know, I'm working on a website with a friend of mine, Jason. Jason Berg, it was a huge help to us in the beginning. He has a lot of knowledge with WordPress and, you know, website building and graphic design. He built our logo for us, and we worked side by side. And we launched our website, built up a following, which took a really long time. And, you know, that basically got us into group breaks and case breaks, and took a lot of research and a lot of time to get in with distributors, build up relationships with the salesmen in those distribution centers, and building up inventory, building up relations with, you know, different customers and different people out there. And that basically covers the online aspect of it. And then basically the reason, you know, or not the reason, but the follow-up to that was opening the hobby shop, was getting the business out of the house. It grew so quickly. I'm serious. It grew really, really quickly, and we weren't ready for it at all. We opened a can of worms, and we didn't know what we were getting into. And before we knew it, we were waking up in the morning. We had, you know, shipping envelopes next to our bed. And, you know, we go out to the kitchen, and the computer is on our kitchen table where we would eat breakfast. And we had no room to sit down or do anything. So, you know, my wife and I look at each other. We can't. We said to each other that we couldn't keep doing that. So, yeah, we started shopping around. We found a place, to answer your question, Ryan. We found a place actually right down the street from where I live, fortunately. It's about right. 2 seconds away from my house, which is awesome. And it's about 1,200 square feet, actually.
Okay. Yeah, good.
It's a big shop.
Yeah, it is.
And also, yeah, to also answer your question, people will call pretty much. I get about 3 to 5 phone calls every day trying to sell me their cards, you know. I'd say 95% of those phone calls are people that have cards also like I do from the 90s, and they, you know, they want to sell their cards. They I guess they think they're worth money, and, you know, and I hate to be the bearer of bad news and tell them, you know, that they're not worth anything and I'm not interested, and, you know, but once in a while we have some interesting stuff come in. A guy came in the other day with a full ledger, and I do mean a full chronicled ledger with a leather-bound back and everything of the entire year of 1969 Sporting News newspaper articles.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you get it from him?
I didn't want to make an offer because I wasn't sure of the true value of it. I did a little research,
right.
And, you know, I didn't want to embarrass the guy because he knew it was worth money, but he wanted to bring it to me to show it to me. I don't know if he even really wanted to part with it, but he wanted to get a value. So, but yeah, about once a week I have something really, really interesting come through the door, and, you know, it's always fun. So,
yeah. And then how many people come in and maybe talk a little bit, not, I guess, specific numbers, but it kind of vaguely, people trying to get you to advertise, and what specifically, I guess, not your online business, but just your card store, getting the word out about your card store locally. How do you go about doing that? Are you doing grassroots things? Are you spending money on advertising? How are you trying to get the word out about your kind of card shop?
Well, what we did was there's a couple of local, like a Shopee, if you will, and it's actually called the Shopee, where you can, you know, all the small businesses in the area advertise in the Shopee, and, you know, you can, it's like a, almost like a, everybody puts like classified ads in there and stuff like that, like things for sale, and it's just a local, you know, gazette, if you will, and we advertise in there, and, yeah, we have about 5-6 different people come in about once every week or 2 weeks saying, hey, you know, you want to re-up that ad now? Do you want to try a whole page? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? And, you know, it's okay. We understand, you know, that they're just trying to do their job and we're trying to do ours. So, but yeah, we do some small advertising, and we actually open the store as a soft opening. We never really advertised our actual opening. So what we did was we actually set up a grand opening for February 16th and 17th of this month. We're giving away 4 Sixers tickets, a family four-pack, for like a door prize and a grand prize and everything. And, yeah, we're doing our full, like, full-blown grand opening. We're going to have, like popcorn and soda and, you know, hot dogs and the whole deal, like trying to get it very family oriented and have people bring their kids in and everything. So it should be a lot of fun. We've been advertising that locally as well.
Do some of your customers get involved? Some of your customers who maybe don't even think about the online portion of card collecting, and they just appreciate being able to go in locally to a card shop. Do some of them get involved in your breaks, or how does that? Do you have something in your store where people can get involved in your breaks, and how do the kind of the two businesses kind of coexist?
That's another good question, actually. We have, basically, what we did was we split our store in two, almost. The front half of the store is all the retail, my display cases for singles and our supplies, our Beckett's and, everything basically retail end is in the front of the shop. And then there's like a knee wall and kind of not a divider, but, you know, you can see there's a separation. And as you walk into the back part of the store, you can see where our online aspect is. The entire setup for our online case breaks is back there. Our shipping area is back there. All of our sorting is back there. And then people see it and they ask, you know, what do you got going on back there? It looks like a factory almost, you know, and I got cameras and lighting and, you know, it's kind of interesting looking, needless to say, if you don't know what it is. And they ask about it and I walk them through it and tell them exactly what we do. And then I show them the website and we've actually picked up a few customers, you know, just by them coming into the store. I have a couple friends of mine that I actually grew up with that I didn't even know collected cars. And they came into our shop, and next thing you know, they're buying into our group breaks online. So, and actually, you know, it's slowly but surely, people are getting more involved in it from coming into the shop. It's pretty interesting.
That's really good. That's really good. What are people buying in your area? Tell me again what city and state you're in, and then what are people, at least initially, coming into your hobby store and buying, and what's selling really well?
Well, first off, we're located in North Cape May, New Jersey. It's not directly in Cape May. We're just outside of Cape May, north of the canal in Cape May County. That would be exit 0 off the parkway. Off the Garden State Parkway. So we are on the southern tip of New Jersey. So the real Jersey Shore, if you will. right now, I'd say probably our best seller is a 2013 Top Series 1. You put that stuff on the shelf and people come in immediately. It's always highly sought after, and, you know, all the set collectors and everybody wants to see the new stuff. So that and probably Prism Football as well.
Nice. Well, I wish you a tremendous amount of luck. It sounds like you really know what you're doing. I know when I didn't open mine, I didn't really know what I was doing. So it sounds like you're on the right track and you've got a good kind of model going. So I'm very excited about that. Thanks for answering my questions. It's good to talk to somebody who's passionate and definitely has a good thing going.
Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate that.
Definitely. And you can check them out at LaytonSportsCars.com. And what are some of the, you know, biggest, you know, more larger pulls that you guys gotten recently? Talk about some of those.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Super Bowl halftime mixer, we're actually the reason the lights went out, just so you guys know. Yeah, we were doing our live feed. We did a special halftime show, and it ran a little bit longer, which was kind of to be expected. And right as the power went out, we pulled a Andrew Luck Prism Refractor auto relic to, I think it was to 36. That was a big one. We like simultaneously pulled that and the lights went out in the Superdome. So that was pretty funny. But yeah, that was a fun pull. We've been pulling a lot of great stuff lately. Let's see. Over the last few months, definitely the biggest pull, and nothing's really topped it since, was the Stan Musial bat knob. That was a few months ago. Out of Triple Threads, 2012 Triple Threads. That was a biggie. Very exciting. Probably the biggest pull I've ever had, or even seen for that matter, in person. So that was very exciting. Everybody jumped on and saw it, and, you know, that was a breathtaker. Needless to say, I was speechless. I still go back and watch the video and laugh at myself because I didn't know what to say. I stammered. I completely stammered through it. It was really funny.
Nice.
And then shortly after that, we pulled a Reggie Jackson bat barrel out of Triple Threads as well. So, needless to say, Triple Threads treated us very well. 2012 treated us really well.
Yeah, that's a good little set. And on the topic of box breaks, you know, what do you think, you know, as this, you know, side of the industry of online case breaking is, you know, forever growing and more guys are, you know, stepping up to the plate, what do you think we can do to, you know, make things more honest, you know, because there's a lot of criticism out there. It's a very trusting side of the business, you know, without, you know, divulging too many details. What do you think we can do to, you know, keep this thing honest?
Well, that's something I think about constantly, and I've talked with friends of ours and other breakers, et cetera, about the same subject, and it's a sticky situation, and it's a hard question to answer, to be honest with you, because there's different things you can do to implement almost like a certified type breaker situation.
Right.
Like making you know, these people have to follow these rules and, you know, you expect them to follow said guidelines if they are a certified breaker by some external third party company. And I know
this idea has been thrown around.
You know,
like a better business bureau, but like the better breaking bureau.
Exactly.
A regulator.
Yep. Yeah. Found out.
This is something that it's not my idea, believe me. You know, I've spoken with it with close friends of ours, and you know, this is somebody else's idea, and it's actually I'm hoping to have it brought up at the summit.
I just patent it right now.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like I think somebody who's close to the industry that knows what is to be expected of a group breaker. Just because, like you said, there are, unfortunately, businesses out there and there are practices out there that don't follow, you know, any particular etiquette or guidelines. And, I think it can only do good for our end of the business. And I think that people need to take a step back and think about what they're doing. And I think this would give that opportunity to everybody to kind of practice better business and also to promote better business to their customers and make everyone feel better about group breaks and case breaks. And I think everybody would only benefit from it. I think that.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting idea. And I think that there could be somebody that steps in, whether it be a manufacturer or manufacturers together that kind of put a certified or, like you said, a kind of a stamp of approval that, you know, that these people are safe and your money is safe here. I mean, one of the good things about PayPal is, you know, you have, I think, 45 days to file a claim. So that's one thing to people out there to be wary of, you know, somebody that it does, you've never maybe dealt with and you know, they have it scheduled to break for 45 days. So that's something to be wary of because then you can't get a refund. So going PayPal is definitely safe, but you know, make sure it's live is huge. There's still unfortunately people out there that just do YouTube, which there's a lot of room for error or questioning with that. And you know, the summit, hopefully they're going to have a panel there. We just talked with Kevin Isaacson, and you know, maybe hopefully there's some good stuff, some good ideas shared, and maybe we can come to something that is along these lines for the group break online case break industry.
Absolutely. And I'm absolutely excited for the summit, and I'm going to be a sponge. Let me tell you, there's so much I'm ready to learn, and I'm willing to share my ideas, and you know, I'm very excited to hear everybody else's ideas, and I'm going to be walking around like a schoolboy with my little pen and pencil, man. I'll be honest with you. I'm going to be taking a lot of notes and learning a lot from, you know, some of the industry leaders out there. I hope to take a lot out of that experience.
And definitely. And that's, you know, it's funny that you mentioned, you know, sponge and meeting people. This whole show is actually going on because me, Dan, and Ryan all met at the summit. So
that is correct. Yes, that is correct.
If it wasn't for the summit, there'd be no connection here. I mean, you're gonna make some valuable relationships that it's just you can't even put a value on it, really.
Yeah, I can't wait. Hopefully, I can sleep through the flight. Needless to say, I'm afraid of flying, and my wife and my friends have been making fun of me for the last week since we got sponsored to go. Just a quick shout out, actually, to Peach State Sports, who they actually sponsored my wife and I and Layton Sports Cards to attend the summit. So I want to thank them while I got
there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good people over there. I used to buy wholesale from them. Good people over there at Peach State Sports.
They take really good care of us. And, you know, Paul at Peach State, he's been taking care of me since we started our business, actually. He was my first salesman. And I've gone through a few since then, and he's kind of stuck by my side ever since. And he's gone to bat for me a few times, and he's always helped us out. So, you know, he actually went out of his way and got us a sponsorship to the summit. I wasn't even going to attend originally, and you know, that helped sway our opinion, that and the rumors of having like a group break or discussion at the summit, that, you know, I felt like it was kind of my duty to our customers and to other group breakers that I would attend and kind of be a part of what's going on out there.
Definitely. Well, Ryan, did you have any other questions for Rich? Or?
Oh, I have all kinds of questions, but maybe we'll get them back on some other time. I love hobby shop owners. I love talking about it. And then I'll see you in Vegas. I'm going to be in Vegas, so I'll see you. Come hang out with us, and, we'll have a good time in Vegas.
Absolutely, man. I can't wait to meet you guys finally, and first round's on me.
Hey, that'll work. All right, book it.
Sounds good. We'll introduce you to Buffalo Bills.
Oh, wow, I don't know. Can we go classier? I mean,
nah, man, that's about as classy as it gets.
Oh, man. Yeah. You'll see. All right, Rich. Well, you can check out Rich at LaytonSportsCards.com, and you can follow, if my memory serves me correct, at RichLayton42 on Twitter.
That's correct. Yep.
Awesome. Thanks again. It's been a pleasure to have you on and talk about your shop. We'll definitely be doing this again.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate you having me on, and best of luck with the show. I'll be spreading the word to everybody that's following us on Twitter and everything. And best of luck, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, man. Thanks, thank you.
Take care, Rich.
Yep. All right, guys. Bye-bye.
Oh, that was cool. That was a nice getting a little hobby shop owner perspective on things, and
that's
that was
great.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good question, by the way.
Well, I mean, I could go. It'll be good when I can talk to him without the being recorded live, and I can just talk to him about some things, because I have a lot of memories of my own failures, and it sounds like, I mean, he's doing an amazing thing, kind of splitting his shop in half. And, you know, he's got a 1,200-foot store, which is big, and which is big enough, but not too big to where you're getting in over your head. So that, he sounds like he's got it on point. So that would be great. We'll see him in Vegas, and maybe we'll have to do some shows in Vegas and get some people on down there.
We will. I'll have to keep it to, like, a two-drink minimum before we go on the air, or else I'll be slurring. Larry McGee,
wow.
You know, so got to keep it PG. But wanted to get into, I was talking to this, I might even talk to this to Dan, but I was talking to Ryan about this. I know this site's been up for a while, and I won't name the site, but it does revolve around pack searching, and it's a membership site. And, you know, I think that's a very slimy side of the industry. It's basically a site that you pay a fee and they tell you how to pack search specific products. And
I'm not hip to this. Well, this is crazy.
Well, we've talked about this subject in earlier Mojo Break podcasts, and Sports Card Radio might have talked about it as well. But I noticed that these said people, which I'm not going to give them any press, created a Twitter and they followed us, and I was like, okay, so I clicked on their site, and I was like, it was a professional looking site. I mean, it looked, you know, really nice, the site itself, you know, the design. But it literally breaks down. You pay $5 a month or like $30 for the year, and they have YouTube videos on how to finger feel packs and find the hits. Yeah. And I expected a backlash on Twitter when these guys got on there, but I haven't really seen, maybe they haven't followed enough people yet. I mean, I don't think there's anybody that's really happy about somebody that does that. I mean, what do you think, Dan?
That's pretty slimy, man. Like, the thing is, we have talked about this. Like, with the retail stuff, I mean, that's like the ground zero. That's where the kids get involved in it. I mean, let's face it, a lot of the stuff now in the hobby shops, a lot of it's like, you know, you can't spend your lawn mowing money to go buy a pack of cards because a lot of it's like just too expensive. So basically where a lot of kids get their start now is, and they get introduced to the hobby, is at the retail avenue. So like the Walmart and the Targets and stuff like that. And I hate to say this, but it's like you're stealing from kids, man.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
It's pretty weak.
Yeah, I mean, and Target and Walmart, it's obviously such a small percentage of their business that they really don't care. I mean, I would love to see it behind a counter, or maybe we could solve it by having those. I've seen them in card stores, and I don't know what the technical name is for it. Ryan, you may know, the plastic things that are kind of like gravity feeders, and you can pull a pack out at a time.
Yeah, I think that's just a gravity feed. Yeah, I mean, that's what they call those little the boxes at Target and stuff. But if you regulated it somehow to where you had to pick one at a time, and that was the one you got, almost like a vending machine, but you wouldn't want to, like a candy vending machine, how it just drops the pack right. I mean, you wouldn't want that with a pack of cards, but something to that nature where it is a totally random process, whatever pack you are buying. I think that would be ideal. It's just very expensive. Target is not going to set up anything like that for Tops, or, you know, Tops would probably have to pay for something like that.
Well, I mean, and I've heard instances where, like, people, like, reseal, like, those blaster boxes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know what forum I was talking. I was looking at some forum online, and they were talking about people who were like returning packs that were open.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Straight, they opened up the packs and they're like, nah, don't like these, I'm gonna return these. Like,
yeah. Well, or
there,
I would actually
be,
agree with...
there has to be a quality control with the people who work in the retail like avenue. Like, how could basically, it's like opening up a bag of chips and just starting to eat them and go, I'm not really a big fan of these, I'm going to go take them back.
Yeah, that's like just opening all the chips up in the aisle and just laying on the floor and just eating chips and then just walking out of the store.
Hey, man, I don't like this. I don't like this cool ranch flavor. I want to go nacho cheese. I only ate like a quarter of the bag, so can you give me like, you know, 75% of my money back?
Well, I heard there was an article, and I forget what site it was on. It might have even been, I don't remember, but it was about basically, I think it was a news station that was following it. I believe it was in Cleveland, where they would basically buy packs or blasters. I don't know exactly what they were buying, but they would take the hit out and then open the packs so carefully that they were able to pack them back up and then just take it back and go, oh, I bought this for my son and he didn't want it, or he already had it or whatnot. And so they put those things back on the shelf, and they're all missing the hits or anything that was worth of any value that were out of those boxes. So that's, I mean, and the unfortunate thing, and I'm not hating on anybody that works at Target or Walmart, because I've worked at places like that when I was younger. But, I mean, those people don't, I mean, they don't care. I mean, most of them are college students. They're working 3 or 4 hours a day, making minimum wage, and, you know, dealing with, you know, snotty-nosed customers, lack of a better word there. And they just, you know, they just give them the refund and on they go. So, I mean, there's really no, unless you get a manager there, there's probably nobody that's going to stop this from, you know, happening.
Right. It's not, yeah.
Well,
now,
I mean,
somebody that's not cards.
They should do, like, just no returns on cards. If they just had a procedure where there's all cards are purchased as is.
Like you purchase them and you can't return them. That would solve that. I mean, there's items at Target and Walmart and stuff like that where you buy them and you can't return them.
Right. And, you know, there's a lot of people that I've heard, like, you know, some retail sets get really popular. So what people will do is, you know, on the day of retail release, which we don't know about, they'll go ahead and buy all the blasters up, you know, spend $300-$400, and in hopes that they go up. Well, they have 30 days to return the sealed blasters. So they basically buy these blasters, hold on to them, see if it goes up, and if it doesn't go up and they can't make money on eBay on it, they just take them back and get their money back. So it's like a no loss, you know?
No risk.
I mean,
yeah,
no risk because, I mean, that's, I guess, a little bit more legitimate than actually pack searching because those people aren't pack searchers and just trying to sell boxes and make money. But, it's the retail side. I mean, it's weird that they put them so close to the register, too, though. So they obviously, every store that I've been to, at least here in California, all the packs are close to the register. So there is a bunch of people around. It's not like you're like in some corner in the toy aisle and you can sit there and feel it packed. So they must have some kind of hinkering that these are, you know, worth something, and they have to keep an eye on it or keep it close to the register, or else, you know, what's the theory behind
I think they use it just like a lot of retail stores. I think they use it as an impulse. I think Target and Walmart look at baseball cards as an impulse buy that. People are not necessarily going into the store to buy the cards. They're just trying to put them by the counter, you know, where the gum and candy bars are, where it's an impulse buy. You're sitting in line, you're like, oh, baseball cards.
Came in for laundry detergent, bought 5 blasters.
Yeah, but you don't, I mean, for the average collector, I don't think they're going into a Walmart with the intention of just buying cards.
Right.
I think that's what the chain stores look at. They're like, well, we think of these as more of an impulse buy, like magazines. Magazines are like an impulse buy. And a lot of the cards are right by the magazine, so it's more of an impulse than anybody coming in looking for them.
You guys keep up this conversation. I'll be back in a couple minutes here.
You know, another thing is that I'm sure they have some deals worked out. I mean, Target sells end cap space or premium space in their store. I don't know if there's some kind of national deal where all these leagues pull together and get that. Because it is a nice little spot in the store, and it's in every single store. They're in the exact same spot, those packs and stuff. It's just, the ones that I see selling are the Yu-Gi-Oh! And the Pokemon and the Magic. I mean, that's where all the money's at, it seems like, at least a little bit for Target and Walmart.
Exactly, because I've seen, you know, it seems like Target and Walmart's a little different. It seems like Walmart has the card set where it's going to be more like an impulse. It's going to be by the counter. But a lot of the Targets that I've been to, it's a separate little, like, nook, like a little location where they have accessories, they have, like, binders, they have, like, full sets, they have the blaster boxes, they have the rack packs, the gravity feeders, but it's like a fairly big, like, you know, section of a store. And they also have the Yu-Gi-Oh! And they have the Pokemon. So, yeah, I mean, Target, they definitely have, like, a specific retail space that they use for cards and collectibles and stuff like that.
And I wouldn't be surprised if that is paid for, like, because Target has no affiliate. Target could stop selling trading cards, and it wouldn't even – they could stop selling them in every single location, and it wouldn't even be a drop in the bucket to them. I mean, it wouldn't even register on the Richter scale. So I just – that's got to be a
– Oh, I think you're right. I think there is a retail distributor.
That gets that space for them. I've heard the MLBPA helps them get in. I mean, because you can't just create a product and all of a sudden it's like, oh, Target, I'll just sell it at Target. I mean, that's an extensive process.
But I think there is a sports card and collectibles retail distributor like division where they only deal with the retail product. Because I don't think the distributors that we deal with, like GPS and stuff like that, they're definitely not dealing with Walmart and Target, and they're not selling the retail blasters.
Right.
So I think there is like a there's definitely some kind of distributor avenue that that the manufacturers are using.
Right.
And it wouldn't surprise me if that distributor is paying a premium to get a specific location in the store.
Well, and right. I know who distributed it. It's actually they used to be called Excel Marketing, and now they're called Beckett and Associates, which
Beckett. It's a different Beckett than the Beckett Media. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. So they're the ones that are actually supplying the product on a retail level, and you guys may have already talked about this, but you know, obviously with retail products coming out early, especially 2013 tops of the SPs, you know, it does cause some, you know, hobby shop owners, you know, like, hey man, I can't put my stuff out till Wednesday. Why do people have this stuff on Friday?
Right.
So there's no control there on the retail level, and that goes back to, you know, they'd rather sell, you know, $1,000 computers than, you know, $20 sports cards. I mean, there's probably a lot more people in that section of the store than, you know, that are putting out baseball cards. So there's less control there. So
definitely less
control. And, you know, I wanted to talk about, since we just mentioned 2013 tops, have you guys seen these Giants World Series cards on eBay? Have you seen some of the prices on these cards?
They go for crazy money. Yeah, they go for a lot of money. 100 pence for like 120 bucks or so. Jersey out of 100 and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and what's crazy about it is it's not actually a World Series jersey. So that's the biggest thing is people, I don't know if some people are misled or people that are paying these prices. I mean, I'm a Giants fan, so it's cool to collect that set. I wouldn't pay that kind of premium for it. I'd maybe pay $40 for 100 pence. You know, $100 is way out of my range. But, you know, Buster Posey selling for $400, his auto jersey variation in there. I mean, you could get a Bowman Chrome on card auto, first auto ever for $250. You know, but people are paying $400 for this number to 99 World Series relic. It's cool to remember those years, but.
Right.
I don't know. Do you think some people are being misled and thinking they're actually game-used relics?
They might be. I had somebody email me. He pulled a Lincecum, and he wanted to know how much he could get for it. And I think a Lincecum on eBay, I think the guy took a best offer for like $120 or something. And so, but I looked back to see, well, what is the Lincecum out of 2011 tops? Because they won the World Series in 2010, and so in 2011 tops, they also had the same exact thing. And the Lincecums and the Posies, it's like they hold their value. It's not like those things drop off the table.
Right.
So I told the guy, hey, you know, selling it dirt cheap would be $40-$50, but if you hold on to it, it's not going to drop in value. Those cards are hard to get, even though they're numbered to 100. Those cards are not easy to get at all because there's only, whatever, 7-8 players. So, you know, I don't know if people get confused that it's the World Series thing. I don't know if they care. I think it's just we all kind of know Giants fans that they're just, you know, the Bay Area's got a lot of money flowing through it. So somebody trying to put together a set or they want a 100 pence card for $150, hey, they'll just do it because they're paying $4,000 rent on their apartment. So $150 is a lot of money to them. So
definitely.
What's the checklist? You said it's like 7 deep. So I mean, is anybody?
I'd have to. I think it's Crawford, Posey, Xavier Nady, Hunter Pence, Terrio, Lincecum.
We can pull it up on sportscardradio.com. Little plug there. I just pulled it right up here. I actually had this printed for last week's show, and I don't know where it went.
So we're talking
in the middle somewhere in there.
So they made relics of X Nady and the Riot.
Yeah,
yep.
Those are selling for like $50-$60, easy, maybe a little more than that. Yeah.
Wow.
And we're talking just a relic, like a single color World Series relic.
Just
relic. For the number to 99.
Yeah.
Some of them are multi-tone, but we've seen some single colors sell for $50-$60 of Ryan, the Riot, Therio. Yeah, Scudero gets good money.
Yeah.
You know, Posey's probably the biggest draw. Crawford's in the set, but Crawford's, I think, believe a redemption. for his auto at least. So, yeah, just really crazy. Oh, the World Series auto checklist, there's only five guys. So the relics is 1, 2, 3. There's about 10 guys. The autos is just Crawford, Posey, Bumgarner, Kane, and Sandoval. So those are the only World Series relic autos.
So are the relic autos numbered to, like, 10? They can't. They're not numbered to 99, are they?
No. I can't remember what those are numbered to. I can't remember. Something.
They're probably lower than 99.
I'm not seeing the numbering on them, but, yeah, they would have to be. I mean, it would have to be pretty short printed, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, those are still, I mean, even anything out of Series 1 that's numbered at 99 is a pretty hard pull.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I want to do a quick giveaway, see if somebody can call in. We'll see if anybody out there in Radio Land is listening. I wanted to give away a free spot in our Contenders 6-Box Random. What you got to do is call in. You got to go on sportscardradio.com and find out who the number one base set card is in Contenders. Who's number one on the base set of Contenders? So the first person to call in, you could find the checklist at sportscardradio.com and call in, tell us who is base card number one, and you're going to win a free spot in Contenders Random via mojobreak.com for tomorrow. So you guys are waiting for the number. It's 347-855-8815. So once again, 347-855-8815. And that's it's a random style break. It's a half case. And to win, you got to, first person to call in here, you got to say who's the number one base card in the set. So we'll see if those phone lines light up. And,
basically, who's card number one, right? What we're looking for.
Yep. And I know it. Maybe I can win it. Yes. Maybe I'll call in from another number.
I could just start guessing.
it's not a Ram. It's not Legion of Doom's James Laurinaitis. It's not him.
Oh man, that guy's a beast.
I believe he was on WWE the other night, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I'm gonna confirm that, but I heard he joined his father or something on WWE because, you know, the Rams didn't make the playoffs, so he had a lot of time off. So,
yeah.
You know, he was able to make appearances on WWE. So, let's see. Yeah, I think he did.
Sweet. Well, I gotta get going, so.
All right. Well, it was nice chatting with you, Dan. We'll see you next week, and I'll see you tomorrow, busting packs.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Doug, and thanks, Ryan. And, I'll talk to you guys next week.
All right.
Thank
Sounds
you.
Good.
All right. Later.
So, once again, that call-in number is area code 347-855-8815. Free spot of 2012 Contenders Football, random style. All you got to do is go on sportscardradio.com, look up the checklist for Panini Contenders Football, and tell us who the first card in the base set, which player it is. That's all you got to do, and you can win a free spot, which you could get the Colts, get an Andrew Luck, and boom, you're set.
That would be nice.
What do you think about Contenders so far? It looks like a pretty extensive checklist. I mean, I'm looking at it. Looks like they added a lot more rookies than just the rookie premier guys. There's according to your site here, there's like 145 different autos that you can get.
Because there's and they even added some guys down at the bottom. It's weird how the checklist runs, because they're gonna have all those rookie ticket autos, which is like Alfred Morris, the non RPA guys. But then they had guys, because see, that set runs to 200. So card 101 through 200, they're going to have the little parallels. They're going to have the playoff ticket autograph, the playoff tickets at 99 or less, the 20th edition tickets at 20, some printing plates. But then they have like 236 is Deontay Thompson, 237's Justin Tucker, and it runs all the way down to 245. I don't know if these are the SP guys, or I'm sure some of these other guys are going to be
short printed. That's the one thing people always have to watch out about these sets, is they always throw a little thing in there, and then they don't tell anybody about it for a couple of weeks, and they kind of let people figure it out.
It creates a buzz, and people are looking for it. Yeah, it's definitely a great idea. Well, it looks like we do have somebody that called in. So,
Yeah,
205. I'm going to bring you on right now. 205. Who are we speaking with?
Me. From Alabama.
Nate?
Me.
Nick. What's up, Nick? How's it going, man?
Man, what's going on?
Not much. Just hanging out talking about sports cards. Thanks for listening. And do you have the answer to the question there?
Is it Larry Fitzgerald?
That's the man. Dang, winner. So let me, if you could, we'll go ahead and get your info. If you could message freemojocontest@gmail.com or even just hit us up on Twitter, one way or the other, we'll get your name on that slot, and that break will be going down tomorrow, so you'll have a free spot in that.
Okay, that'll work for me.
Awesome. What's your favorite team, man? What do you collect?
Well, actually, I just got back into collecting, and football
nice.
And baseball.
Nice. What's the guy you're PCing, or is there a couple different guys that you PC these days? Person of collecting. Sorry for my abbreviation there.
I just got back into it, and I found you all site with my cousin, and I'm just trying to get my collection back started. It's not anyone I'm really just looking for right now. It's just need to get back started.
Nice. Well, that sounds good, man. Well, we appreciate you listening in, and you got a free spot for tomorrow. So do you know how to find us on Twitter?
Yeah, I think I follow you all already.
Okay, so go ahead and shoot us a message on there. That'd probably be easier than writing down the email. Shoot us a message on there, and then we'll follow you, and then we'll DM each other, and we'll get the info so we can get you that free spot tomorrow.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, man. Well, you take care.
You too.
All right, bye.
All right.
That was cool.
Larry
all right.
Fitzgerald.
Great spot.
Yeah, that could be big. You know, that could start his collection off right. Get Robert Griffin, get a Andrew Luck or something like that, SP card. I mean, shoot, some of these offensive lineman cards from, like, a couple. I think there was one even last year that there were only, like, five of them, and they were selling for, like, $300-$400 or something, and it's, like, some offensive lineman, you know, that it's just a very limited quantity of his cards that they produce. And they usually release the SP information. Usually people, like sometimes bloggers or some really like smart forum people, they're able to put together the SP list on their own just by kind of counting eBay auctions. And so I kind of keep track of that. I don't put anything really on my site until it's official, because I hate to like lead somebody astray saying, well, this is probably an SP card, and then maybe they sell it or they buy one, and then it turns out it's not an SP card. So just so people know, if they come to my site, I try to wait until it's the real deal from Panini or my own research or something. So
like I said, and it's gonna you'll get more up there as it goes along, and it's they obviously do this on purpose as far as not releasing the SPs, because it does create a buzz. And there was a guy last year, it was a Cowboys lineman that was like, I think it was only numbered to 20, not numbered on the card.
That's the one I was talking about. Blew up, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember his name, but like literally even I looked a couple weeks ago, one sold for like $300. So it's like just the SP version of a guy. I mean, not even a big name guy. So. You know, one guy I was looking that I don't see in here that I know Dan's near and dear to his heart is Legatron, Greg Zuerlein. He's a rookie for the Rams, rookie kicker. I know they have Blair Walsh in there, but there he is, card number 187. So that's another cool thing about Contenders, is that you start getting, you know, some people don't like kicker cards, but I think it's kind of cool, especially if you're a Rams collector. You know, that's probably his one and only autograph that you can collect. I mean, the guy kicked, like, what, a 60-yarder this year or something. So, you know, pretty promising future.
I guess the only thing is if you're buying a box for, what is a box, 120 on these? Or is it more than that?
I think it's 150. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So 150, I'm stuck back in, like, 2006 prices and stuff. So, like one, although back then it was probably, like, $80. So, like, you're buying a box for 150. And you get five autographs, two of them are going to be on card. I mean, let's say you get, like, you know, your two on cards are Michael Agnew and Chris Givens, and then you get a kicker, you get an offensive line. You know what I'm saying? So, I could see the kick, good for the kickers. I'd almost wish they were, like, an extra hit or something weird like that, because I could just see if you pull it, if you spend it $150 is, I mean, I blow a lot of money, but $150 is a good amount of money to be gambling with. So, it's just, that's the only issue that I have with the set, is that sometimes it's too deep, and if you don't hit that good SP card, or if your on card is not good, you know, you're not coming anywhere close to the 150. If that's something you care about, some people, they just buy it and they don't really care, and they're just having fun with it.
I do agree. Yeah. It is a little watered down as far as what they've got in there, and maybe that's where they off play it with the SPs, especially early, so people wonder, like last year, I pulled Dan Bailey out of one of my personal boxes, and I'm like, maybe it's an SP because it's a kicker, you know? Because in recent memory, I didn't remember kickers being in the set, but now that I see there's kickers in this set, it's something they do every year. But, you know, I was thinking at the time, I'm like, Dan Bailey, SP, and like first couple cards of Dan Bailey were selling for like $30-$40. Maybe I wish I would have capitalized on that, because I still have it in my PC box, but, you know, I held on to it just hoping that it would be an SP, and it turned out it wasn't, so...
Right.
But it looks like they are promising five on card, or five autos, I should say. I know last year it was four, but a lot of boxes had five and six. So we may see that this year, where we have some boxes that may have six and seven. I don't know, seven maybe pushing the boundary, but you know, for a case break or for a box break, it is a good price to grab a team at, you know, $37 or whatever price people have it out there. And we have it at like 37 a spot for a half case, and that's, you know, if we get five autos at the very minimum, that's, you know, that's 30 autos. So it's a lot of, you know, cards being spread around for sure. But it looks like, you know, according to your site, sportscardradio.com here, there's a lot of, well, there is some veterans. So, you know,
veteran autographs.
AJ Green, it looks like CJ Spiller, Demaryius Thomas, Victor Cruz, John Baldwin, Greg Little, Torrey Smith, Josh Freeman, Jordy Nelson, Michael Crabtree. They also have, which I'd love to see what these cards look like, they have the quad autographs, and one of them, they're numbered to five, so they're going to be super rare, but there's one that's Aaron Rodgers, Roethlisberger, Drew Brees, and Eli Manning.
Wow.
That would be a pretty sweet card.
And even the Legends autographs right below that. I mean, Bernie Kosar, Montana.
Yeah, Bill, I'm looking at that too. Yeah. Bruce Smith, it looks like maybe.
Is Joe Montana in there?
There's a – yes, yeah. Joe Montana's in the set.
But is he on the checklist, though? Because that's a sell-sheet picture. I'm not seeing his name. What number is he?
Well, there's Legendary Champion insert cards I see. You know, that is – well, they would almost have to put him in there.
Does that happen? No, I see that happen. That's why I have to go in and change the pictures all the time, too, because I might have to – I might got to double-check that maybe. He may not have an autograph in the set, which would be interesting.
And then, it looks like there's – as I scroll down, there is more veterans on the side.
Right.
Greatness, which are numbered a little lower. You got Gronkowski, Vernon Davis, DeSean Jackson, Arian Foster, Sidney Rice. So I'm surprised they didn't try to squeeze, like, Kaepernick in there. Maybe they just, you know, time permitting, you know, they couldn't get him in the set. But
I know. I was thinking about that the other day, and I'm looking at all these base sets that are coming out. And I know it's just a base card, but and I'm sure it'd be very difficult to get Colin Kaepernick to sign anything or agree to sign anything right now,
right,
or at least in the last month. But could you get a base card of the guy in there?
Seriously?
You know, like the guy is on fire. Once he took over as starter, and it was pretty much confirmed, okay, this guy's a starter. Could we get a base card in Prism or something? It just seems these base sets are selling stone.
They could have literally just yanked Alex off the checklist, you know, changed the picture, put the same number, made a Kaepernick. I mean,
I know it all has to get approved, and the league has to approve every card because they don't want cards, you know, that are inappropriate, or a Michael Beisner card or a Barry Bonds asterisk card, and some of these cards that have slipped into the market over the years. So there's a, I guess, somewhat tight kind of regulatory kind of thing where
sure.
they can't just make a Kaepernick. Yeah, they can just make a Kaepernick card, but there's a process to it. They've got to get a license for the photo, blah, 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 all this stuff. They've got to get it approved by the league. So I just wish it was an easier process because it seems like that, this should be a guy. Yeah, if it's a bit, imagine if he had a gold prism in.
I know.
In,
yeah.
You know, that base card. That card would be hot. And especially
yeah.
if he won, I mean, it would be times two. So I don't know.
I know. I could only imagine that prism card selling for $1,500, $2,000 possibly, you know,
yeah.
especially right before the Super Bowl. It would have been perfect timing, too, because it was, you know, prism came out last week, right 3 days after the Super Bowl. Somebody pulls that gold
yeah.
Kaepernick. Boom. I mean, it's, yeah, that would have been great. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if they somehow try to squeeze them in the high-end sets like five-star or NT, you know, like if they try to, you know, get something in there for some of this year's releases, or they just give up and they throw them in next year's products. But, I mean, that's one of the guys that's, you know, been kind of absent from sets all this year, so.
Yeah, and he's, like, the hottest guy. I mean, he's one of the hottest guys in the NFL. I mean, in terms of, like, a heat index, I mean, the guy's, you know, right up there, even losing the Super Bowl. So,
yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah,
what are you going to do?
Maybe Brian Gray is just, you know, trying to sign an exclusive or something. I don't know. I'm just
kidding. If anybody could track the guy down, it's him. The one man, the guy's like who doesn't have this big team of people around him, and yet time and time again he gets kind of marquee people to sign for a set. So it just goes to show you, if you just work hard, you can do anything.
Definitely. Well, I think that pretty much just sums up the show. I mean, we hit on a lot of topics. I had more to discuss, but we'll just push it to next week, and you know, we're live here every Tuesday, and we're going to get something going with your guys' forum on sportscardradio.com. We'll have some contest coming up that we'll win some free stuff. Yeah, we'll do it through your through Sports Card Radio's forum. We'll continue to give prizes away every week as much as we can, and thank you guys for listening, and you know, retweet us if you can. We'll get some more listeners and get more people to call in. Well, maybe you don't want people calling because you want to win the prizes for yourself. But, you know, if you don't want to be, you know, like, I want to win everything, maybe retweet us. You can follow us at Card Radio Live on Twitter for the show. And same bat time, same bat channel every Tuesday, and unless we, you know, send out a message that we're sick or something, or the Niners lost another Super Bowl and I can't make it or something. I don't know, you know. But be sure to check out our sites, mojobreak.com, for any, you know, upcoming group breaks, any products. We do all four major sports, so cheap as $5. You can find something on the site. And we're doing also a free limited football break tomorrow. So all you got to do is sign up through our Facebook and make sure you're subscribed to us on Blog TV, and you can get in on that as well. So if you missed out on the free contender spot, you can still get in on the free limited break if you haven't signed up yet. So check that out, and check out the sweet checklist. There's a lot of products coming up this week. Ryan's got 2012 Magic up. I'm sure he's going to be putting more things as you know, cards start coming out. That's a Friday release, so Magic Football. And
although you can probably find it at retail right now, Magic Football. I haven't even messed with it yet, but I will update that page in the next day or two.
Yeah, definitely. As stuff surfaces, definitely check out the site. Check out the contenders checklist, and, you know, tweet us with who you want to collect in the set. Like maybe some guy that's not in a lot of sets, like maybe like an Alfred Morris or something, or, you know, maybe Greg Zerline. Maybe you got that Legatron 6 to Midnight condition that Dan has, you know. So check that out. So we're going to hit you with the outro, and we'll see you guys back. We'll see everybody back next Tuesday. If, you know, you're just catching the tail end of this will be uploaded to iTunes. Right now, currently, it's under the Mojo Break thing, but we'll probably have a separate little show page for this as well. So that's pretty much it. And let me hit the outro, and we'll see you guys next week.
Later.
Later.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Sports Card Live, sponsored by SportsCardRadio.com, MojoBreak.com. Check us out every Tuesday live at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 Eastern, or download us on iTunes.